Are you looking to expand your mind? Do you like to challenge and be challenged? Looking to improve yourself and share your experiences professionally and personally? You're in the right place. Welcome to Scoutcast, Roasting Marshmallows, with your host, Rolf Sird.
And we are live. Welcome to another episode of Scoutcast. My name is Rolf Sird, and I'll be your host. So today we are talking about SAFE, a framework that empowers complex organizations to scale up agile practices across the enterprise. Now, SAFE, if you don't know, stands for Scaled Agile Framework, and it's being used by hundreds of the world's largest organizations. SAFE promises to sustain and drive faster time to market, dramatic increases in productivity and quality, and improvement in employee engagement. The experience we as Four Scouts have with SAFE has not always been stellar, but maybe it is because we have never been properly explained how to effectively employ SAFE by an expert. So today, this is all going to change because our guest is Jesse Wieringa, a certified SAFE Agilist. And a certified SAFE Agilist is a leadership professional who is part of a lean agile transformation, and Jesse will explain us what that means exactly. But this includes, among others, applying SAFE to scale lean and agile development in the enterprise, applying lean agile mindset and principles, executing and releasing value through agile release trains. So I'm very curious about that. So Jesse has spent the last 5 years at Uriel, where he started as a project manager, became a Scrum Master and Agile Coach, and now works there as an Agile Organization Coach. And before that, he was working at Aegon as a PO. Welcome, Jesse. Glad to have you on the show.
Thanks, and thanks for the nice introduction, Rolf.
Yes, do you have anything to add to the introduction, maybe, for the listener?
No, I think it was quite complete. Indeed, the last 5 years at Euro, where I'm now Agile Organization Coach, and recently started up the SAFE implementation. So I will tell you a bit more about that during this show.
All right, thank you. So, and I'm joined, of course, today by two of my well-liked and loved colleagues, Panche and Arno. So, Panche, how are you doing,
which
man?
Which one is the liked and which one is the loved, Rolf?
Yeah, man, I was wondering as well.
Yeah, you can pick and choose, man.
Okay, I'm definitely the loved one.
Yeah.
You are, Arno. Hey, Rolf. Yeah, it's good, man. Good to be back.
Yeah. Sweet. Nice. And, of course, Arno, you're back as well, man. How are you doing?
Yeah, well, minor cold, so hopefully it won't be too bad in the show. But pretty curious about SAFE, to be honest.
And why is that? Do you have a history with SAFE?
Well, I've read about it, and I've read some positive things about it and some negative things about it. So I just want to know the ins and outs, I guess. So pretty happy to have a certified SAFE coach. Is that the word? Or
yeah, sort of.
Sort of. Certified SAFE. Let's call it like that.
Agilist.
Ah, oh, okay. Sorry. Probably the old term.
Names are important.
I worked at a company where they used SAFE or practice it.
I haven't, so that's why I'm pretty interested about it.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So maybe Jesse, you can explain to the listener like what is SAFE and why should. You know, companies, and I'm guessing more enterprise-oriented companies, why should they use it? And what is it and why should they use it?
Well, why they should use it? That's a complex question, but because I think it certainly has to do with what kind of organization you are and then to use it. But maybe first shortly explain what SAFE is and what it is about. Yeah. SAFE stands for Skilled Agile Framework. You already said it in your introduction, and it applies agile throughout a large enterprise organization. And what you'll see there, it uses other methodologies within the framework itself. So teams work with Scrum or Kanban, but it is more an alignment framework. So it is something on top of the teams, where teams can align and work, collaborate closely together. And the SAFE framework is built on lean and agile principles. So it has the foundation of lean values and principles, and also the agile values and principles within there. And based on that, SAFE has created their own values and principles as well, which they used in the framework.
Okay, and why is it that safe? Like, what is it that a company can get out of it then? I mean, if you, as a team, you're working in an agile way, or you mentioned Kanban and some other things.
Yeah.
What is the extra bit that then SAFe brings?
Well, if you look at SAFe itself, it is quite a complex framework. If you have seen the bigger picture of SAFe, you see all the elements in there. There's a lot of content also to look into. And I think I don't like a static framework. So in that sense, I wouldn't predict SAFe as the best framework there is. But I think it is a toolkit with best practices that you that you can use. And I think you have to look what best practices you can use for your company and what will work. And if something doesn't work, get rid of it. So I would rather use it as a toolbox and use all the elements or best practices in there and see what works for your company, instead of using the whole framework and using it as a static framework. Because I really don't believe in static frameworks. It helps you introduce something, but then you have to adapt it and keep improving on it and adapt it to your company. And then it will
work. So let's say if I hear Scrum, I could say I'm safe.
Not totally, because what you will see is Scrum is working in one team or in multiple teams, but then you have to align them and then they have to collaborate with each other. And that's where the scaling comes from. There you need alignment. And of course, there are a lot of frameworks. There's Less, of course, there's Spotify, there's SAFe. And they are all there to create alignment between these teams. And also,
so could you explain to us how that works? Like how the alignment works? How does it work?
There are a couple of extra ceremonies that you will add there. For example, within the SAFe framework, you have the Scrum of Scrums, where product owners or teams meet each other to create alignment and take a look at the dependencies that there are between teams. So that is one of the ceremonies that is in there. We also use the portfolio Kanban and portfolio management within our organization. And there you also have, for example, the portfolio sync to create alignment between the business owners, the POs, and prioritize your portfolio there.
So what kind of alignment should I think about in this case? Like, could you give an example?
You mean with the portfolio?
Well, you're speaking about alignment between different parties, I guess. And I really wonder what a concrete example could be of such alignment.
Well, it could be that you have several teams that are working on a certain topic. For example, in our organization, we are now working on a My Account, a new My Account that we're setting up. And that involves quite some teams there. And we have also split our organization in value streams. So that are sort of mini companies that we have within the organization, all with their own goals and own focus. And what helps there is that the My Accounts, for example, is adding value to all the value streams there. So what we do is create alignment between these teams, take a look at the dependencies that we have there, and make sure that all the product owners align there to take a look at the dependencies.
So what kind of dependencies could that be?
It could be that one team is working on the front end. Another team is working on, we also have reservations for trains, for example. So that's another component where we have to integrate with each other. So that could be a thing where they need to create alignment.
So this is the part I've read about, which bugs me a little bit, to be honest. Because you're talking about front end. Does it mean that a different team takes care of the back end, for example?
In some cases. Maybe I can explain you a bit how we have set it up. We have within the company now three value streams. One is about our distribution platform, how we connect to other distributors that are selling our train passes we sell within our company. So there we are not only connecting our own selling or web shop, but we are also connecting all other distributors. And we have over about 100 distributors there. So we have one value stream that is focusing on partnerships and making distribution platforms available for our distributors. Then we have the second value stream, and that's where we sell our own passes through our own channel. So there we have a web shop. We have our funnel where people can buy our passes. And then we have the last part, and that's where we have services to sell for during travel. And there we have our reservation platform. We have an app, and we have like ancillaries where you can book a hotel or where you can book a taxi service. So all these value streams deliver a certain value for our customers.
So those value streams are like the mini companies you talk
yeah,
about.
Yeah, true. Or,
okay. And they're also sort of independent revenue generators in one way. Yeah. Well, value generators and then revenue generators.
Yeah, correct. And there's also, if you're looking at value stream one, which are creating distribution platforms, they are serving the whole market. So also all our end customers, which we see as the traveler. In the second value stream, we only serve our own customer that we sell or where we sell our passes to our own customers. And in the last value stream, we serve the whole market again with our app and also with our reservation platform. Because every customer that sells a pass via our distributor can still make a reservation to our reservation system in value stream 3. So we are also in a sort of complex organization where we have multiple sorts of customers. So we have a B2B, we have B2C, where we have different channels in there.
Okay. And these value streams that you mentioned, like do these mini companies also deploy like the same app, for example? Like do they work on the same a piece of software that they need to coordinate, or do they all have their independent repository and independent stuff that they're releasing?
Some are connected and some have their own repository. And what we'll see is there will always be connections always with the, mm-hmm. with the value streams. But what we try to do is really set up some mini companies that have their own focus and their own goals. But there will still be some interdependencies between them.
Right. And this alignment that you spoke about, is it really needed that a framework facilitates these alignments? Because like what I'm hearing here is that these teams just need to communicate and, you know, get the priorities, like get them aligned with one another. Do you really need an external framework to facilitate that? Like, can't these teams find each other in a large organization?
I think it is possible to do it with mm-hmm. without a framework, definitely. Okay. I think where we are coming from really helped us to have like a toolkit, as I see it, to create the alignment. Yeah. And I will give a bit of background there because once I started at Euril, it was still a traditional organization. Also the train companies that we work with are still very traditional, and our shareholders, or what we call them members, are the 35 railway companies in Europe. And you can imagine there's a lot of difference in the understanding of working agile and still working traditional. Yeah. So that's the background there. And when I started and joined Euril, it was a very traditional company still working waterfall. And also with our development, there was still with external suppliers. So what we did, we were only a sort of selling organization of the passes there. And we said, well, we need to have our knowledge in-house. We need to have our heartbeat, which is our website. We need to have that knowledge in-house and have to maintain and develop it ourselves. So that was the first step to get in-house development teams in there.
Why do you think that's needed?
Well, if something would happen with our supplier, we would have really certain risk there. Also, if we want to improve our website, it is easier to have people on site than having them off site. At that time, even our supplier was in another country, so abroad. That made it even more complicated. So we said we want.
So you have to sell this. Sorry.
Oh yeah.
Go ahead.
This is how it goes when you really want to make a nice story, huh?
So I was wondering, this is something you have to sell with your, well, the top management, I would say. And did they just go with it? Because it's a mindset change in the end, right? Because software is a thing nowadays.
It's a whole strategy and market approach change, I would say also.
Yeah, so I think there's more to it than just saying we're going to do it in-house. This is more like, okay, we are a software company right now and our behavior should change.
Yeah, true.
How did they feel about that?
The change itself was hard. And also to get people on board with the idea that we are going to transform from a selling company to really a technical company with still having the selling mind in there. But we also noticed that we had to do it to improve our website and to better listen to our customers, what they really need, and making sure that we can implement that a lot faster.
So after the discussion, let's say, okay, you sold the point, like we're going to build software and we're going to build products, super cool. Yep. But why did, in the end, they have to choose for something like Save, or they have to decide Save is the platform to go for them? What made them decide that?
No. We started very small. So we started just with one or two in-house development teams. And around that, we still had some external suppliers. So we started with two development teams, and they just started with Scrum. So we started really small, only in development, and did that for 1 or 2 years. And after that, we noticed that there was quite a gap between business and the development team. So we said, well, we need to change that as well. And there we first came up with extending or applying Scrum or Agile and Kanban to business teams to get them closer also to our development teams. So that was the next step. We call that more like Agile where it fits at the moment.
How does that bring them closer? If you have two separate teams, how does that bring it closer to actually do Scrum?
Well, also working even more cross-functional. So also adding other roles to the teams.
Okay.
So that we really had a cross-functional team that could work together and really produce a product from start till delivery. So that was the next step. And then there came another complex thing. We started merging with our mother company, and then we had an organization that was already trying to work with Agile, and then there came this other party that was more like a traditional party still. And that also was not only within the development teams or in the business, but also our leadership team got merged together. So we had also in our leadership team people with already a sort of agile mindset and some people with a more traditional mindset.
How did that work out?
Yeah.
Those are interesting discussions.
Yeah, that was very interesting. And there we said, well, how are we going to do this? We need to make a culture change there, and maybe also mix it and get together in the middle as a start. And there also the that was about around the culture first, but then also how are we going to work together as a company, and how can we make sure that there's no conflicts in the way how we work together. And then we were struggling because what we tried to do within the organization that we were working before is working agile and starting out small, working bottom up, and yep. see how we can apply it to the rest of the company. And there we had this merge, and then we had this traditional organization working together with this agile organization. And then we said, well, I sat down with the leadership team and said, well, how can we organize it? We already defined that we wanted to work agile and have no hierarchy, so only a leadership team, and then only teams that are working closely together, and no middle management in between there.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty hard for traditional companies.
Yeah.
Let's say we're gonna scratch middle management. I know a few companies that don't like that.
No,
to be honest.
True. And, but it was already it was really nice that we could have that discussion and also ended up with making sure that we don't have a middle management anymore.
And then I'm gonna make a bad joke, right? So you promoted all the managers to product owners or not? Or scrum masters?
No, where agile leaders should focus on or leadership is really look into the strategy, having an outlook. Where do we want to go as a company? Focus on that strategy and let your teams do what they're good at. Make them own their topics and let them make them the decisions that they are hired for. Make them autonomous and let them make the decisions, but stay close so that you can help them along the way. So be a supportive leadership team.
But that would mean for a management team to change from the top-down approach to be more like a servant leader. Yeah. How did they take that? Because I think that's one of the hardest parts that I continuously see that people cannot do.
No. That is hard, and we're still in the middle of that. And that's not only on leadership level, you also see that in other parts of the company. It is a learning, and you need to adapt it. I once heard a story of someone that went for a slip course. And there he said, well, I got a sign on my dashboard that turned red when I hit the brake, and the instructor said, well, don't hit the brake when you get in a slip. And you will always see that someone who does the course always starts hitting the brake, and you see the red light popping up.
Yeah.
And that's the same with when you're doing a transformation like this, people will get back in their old habits and touch the brake again. And that's also the learning curve that we're in together with the leadership team. So we're there to coach them, but also throughout the organization. Also in the teams, you see that they sometimes hit the brake or tend to go to the leadership team to ask for a decision to make.
Yeah, that makes sense, right? Because in the old days you have top down, and then, well, you don't really get a trust to make a decision, and somehow leadership changes to give you the trust to make a decision, and then from bottom you should say, oh, what do I do?
Yeah, true. Yeah, and
I can imagine that being a bit scary for some.
Yeah, true. And I think the leadership team is struggling sometimes with it. When do I assign something to someone, but the other way around, it's the same. People are sometimes struggling. When do I have to reach out to the leadership team to make a decision? And I think there that one of the toolkits that or the best practices that SAFE has in it is it has a description what you can centralize and what you can decentralize, for example. And there, this is one of the things where SAFE can help you, and also a leadership team. And also one of the other things there is that also Lean is saying that as a leadership team, you also must set the example. And I think they're trying that. And that also works throughout the organization. If they see that our leadership team is doing that, then the rest will see, okay, we don't always have to go to the leadership team. Yep. We can make our own
decision. What does the leadership team do then to set the example?
That is sometimes also to force to make let the teams make this decisions themselves, and that helps them. And what
does that mean? That like the leadership is like steps away completely and is like not reachable. It's like you guys figure it out.
No.
Yeah, we're gonna go golfing. See ya.
No, I think that they should be hanging a bit above the teams, so not far away. They should stay close, so they must be reachable, but they also should help them and coach them to make the decision there. And that's sometimes right. hard because it is in a manager that you want to make decisions, and sometimes for teams it's hard that they think, well, it's easier if you make the decision. And you
that's
have to
like
break.
Switching that mindset from management towards more a coach and a facilitator. It's like can be really a tricky switch.
Yeah.
Have people been gone through some coaching trainings maybe?
Yeah, we're giving more basic agile training, but also in Scrum, Kanban. And we're applying agile methodologies in their safe courses as well.
But I mean more like, so that's one on the. I think what you're referring now is going more on the, well, maybe frameworks or methodologies. So it's like do's and don'ts.
Yeah.
But that's like really the things that you can easily point. But then like the mindset change. That's more behavioral. Change, and that's something that takes a long time to do. Yep. And then probably it's also a different skill that you need to learn. It's like instead of providing with the answer, like, oh, come up with more questions that will trigger the other person to actually think and come up with the answers himself. And that's not like that easy, straightforward to address with somebody who is just like, oh, but I see the exit, just go through that door and you're there, instead of like, hey, look around you. What do you see? What do you think you should do?
The mindset is indeed the hardest part, and there's also a difference in doing agile and being agile, and that that also has to do with maturity of the teams of the people, and that will take a while. So also in the trainings we incorporate that. What is a instead of having a fixed mindset, having a growth mindset, and you'll only learn that by doing it and experimenting there. So we also say feel fast and learn fast.
So I have a question about that.
Yeah. Oh, no, continue.
Well, so let's say you are the developer. I'm an engineer for 15 years, right? So
yeah.
I've experienced some pain here and there. So if people say, okay, you should experiment, that's fine, right? That's great. Do that. But if you look practically, and I'm having the safe image in front of my nose, it starts with the team backlog.
Yeah.
So usually it starts with a discussion with the product owner about even the backlog. Like, is that ticket or story or however you call it, is it actually, you know, needed or valuable whatsoever? But if you're going to experiment, this discussion starts there. And that's fine. You can have the discussion. But if I look at safe, there's also a program backlog above it. And even apparently a solution backlog.
Yep.
So if you want to experiment, in my opinion, you should have some sort of freedom to cross boundaries.
That's true.
But if I look at safe, I think you're pretty limited to actually do anything because you have to discuss the product owner and then apparently some business owner and then a solution architect. And before you know it, you're 4 months in. And in my mind, that's not really agile. I don't know how, maybe I'm mistaken on this, but.
No, how we apply it is a bit different. What we'll do is that we have like 40% that we really focus on new epics, for example. So that's more also part of the long-term vision. The other 60% is really up to the team, where they can focus on improvements, experiments, or technical depth. So we made a split there, because indeed, if you only focus on these large epics or larger elements, then it truly isn't agile, of course. So we...
It's kind of nice that you guys do more than half of the time there, because in a lot of companies we see that they would like to have like more 80-20% split, like 80% of backlog work churning out features, and the other 20% is like for working out technical depth. So I think it's a, I think you guys have a great
How did you come up with that split, the percentage then? Why did you choose 40-60?
Well, what we'll do, because, well, in SAFe you, you plan every quarter, sort of. And what we decided...
Sort of.
Well, not sort of. You'll do that.
Oh, I want to go in that discussion as well.
Man. I know you do, Arno.
Please let him finish, man. Let him finish.
No, what we'll do before every quarter, then we also decide what will be the percentages. And most of the time, it is about 40 to 60% that we have.
Cool. Okay.
But Arno, you wanted to
Arno, do you want to go in or can I ask another question? Yeah. So I was like,
no, go ahead, guys.
Silent before the storm.
No, but it's like, it's an interesting topic. And then I actually had exactly a week ago a discussion with a friend whose company is actually also quite big with their implementing SAFe, and it's he was having headaches because of it. So we actually were thinking, oh, maybe he should come also on this podcast today. So it's like, hash it out. But maybe we can see another one in some period. But the question is something you mentioned in the beginning. Yes, it was. So you used, and the way I understand it, you used SAFe as just like sort of like a guideline. Okay, best practices gathered and like, oh, I see. Okay, I'm going to use this. I'm going to use this. Then I'm going to involve it. So maybe a twofold question is, how do you hash out which things are the things that you want to use that you seem valuable or not? So how would you know which one to use and which one not to use? And after how many changes that you've iterated, it's no longer SAFe?
Ah, last one is a nice question. I think we made the like we knew that we wanted to work with the portfolio management because of the members and the railway companies that we're working closely with. Because there we are also looking a bit more at the midterm and long term where we want to go to. So and that are a bit of the larger things. So we already knew that we wanted to apply the lean portfolio management in there. And if you want to do that, you also know that you want to work with the PI planning, for example. And for us, that's also pretty nice because we want to also work together closely with our members that we can actually tell them, well, this quarter, we're going to focus on this part. And besides that, the teams are also working on improvements and other other stuff. So it helps us also to communicate with our members. So we knew that that would be the main parts that we were going to use. And then we looked into the framework, what other elements do we need there to make this work out? And as you notice, it is really a massive framework. And especially we are a small business. We are not like a full enterprise where usually you would apply this. So that made it even sometimes hard to dig in. What are we going to use and what will work within our organization? Yeah. So we also tried some things out, see if it will work, and then make it work. And definitely we are not using everything of the framework.
A joke that we oftentimes have is that, you know, you have the SAFe framework, like the huge, like the overview picture. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, can you point out to me where is the customer on this? And then, sometimes it takes a few minutes for people to find it somewhere crammed in a corner. So, it is, it's huge.
Yeah, it is huge. And indeed, if you're looking for the customer in there, it's really hard with all the elements in there. The funny thing is also, if you look at the other models or framework, you also won't see the customer in there. That's, I think, one of the downsides of all these models, because it is only focusing on developing products, and every time the customer is out of sight. It's never there. But indeed, also in the SAFe framework, it's hard to find the customer in there.
Yeah.
And coming back to your second question, Panche, I think what I earlier already mentioned is I think you should never use a framework static. So I think if we're looking, we started implementing it 3 quarters ago. It still looks like SAFe, but I think if we're looking a year ahead, it will become less looking like SAFe.
Hope that's a good thing. I don't know. Whatever works. I mean, that's what you need to use, right? Whatever works.
That's the thing. Whatever works, and I think it's more about what do you want to reach, and what are the goals that you have. And I think in some companies less might work. In some companies SAFe might work. In some companies you might only work with Scrum. Just look at the goals that you have with your organization and where you want to go to, and use it as a toolbox indeed.
Yeah, but and what do the guys in the trenches feel about, you know, the SAFe framework? Because we had a SAFe certified agilist in the office like 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I can't remember exactly, and he said that you know, it's kind of meant for managers, and you know, it's to make some money. But he could imagine that developers or like teams in general didn't care too much for it. How is that in your real? How do the guys in the trenches view SAFe?
Well, it's quite funny how it went, because when we started, it sort of went bottom up. But the SAFe framework also helped us to get the leadership team on board. That helped there. If you're looking at the framework itself, it is connecting also managers to the teams in there. So I can imagine that people say it's also managers' framework. But what I really like about the framework is that you really get business and IT working closer together. We have now a lot of different conversations that we wouldn't have before, especially now that we are working in these value streams, which I rather call mini companies. Now we have customer service working closely together with development, and working campaigns working closely together with customer service. What we also did is that we split it up, our customer service department, between the different value streams. So we now have customer service focusing around a certain value stream or a product that we are delivering. So it really helped us to have the good discussions between the different teams. And when we are now having these PI plannings, where we have also not only the development teams in, but also the more business-like teams, you also get a lot of nice conversations on what is actually our focus for the next quarter. And there I really see the benefits of this framework. And I think we wouldn't have had that if we only would have applied Scrum there with some teams.
Yeah.
Right. So could you explain the PI for me, like a little bit?
Yeah.
Maybe for the listeners what the steps are, how does it work, and what do you facilitate?
Yeah, the PI planning is a planning where you plan a sort of a quarter. You plan a whole quarter with the teams. And now SAFe describes it. It is only for development teams. So what you'll do with your development teams is that you're going to plan in sprints of 2 weeks, a whole quarter, and you're going to take a look at the dependencies between the teams, and you'll have a certain focus with all these teams that are joining there. We changed that a bit.
So, I think the good side on the planning is that usually you never make it. So how does that work for SAFe? Is that the same thing? This is based on my waterfall and Scrum experience. So
There you also see that there might be delays, of course, and there are dependencies. What really helps is that you have these Scrum of Scrums where you get the alignment between the teams and that you can adjust it. So there, I think the alignment meetings help there to make the adjustments and work it out throughout the value stream. The change that we made compared to how SAFE describes it is that we also incorporated the business teams in the PI planning. So we are there all together mm-hmm. with every team in there. So not only development, so that we create a focus throughout the business and IT to get the alignment also there.
And what does that alignment mean? Do you set up like key results together or objectives or stuff like that?
Yeah, we work indeed with OKRs, objectives, key results, and we measure the result of the value streams with KPIs, also as described in SAFE. So we come up with a PI planning with one or a couple of objectives that we want to run a reach throughout the quarter, and then we use that throughout the big or the PI planning. And how we do that with the PI planning is that our leadership team starts with sharing the long-term strategy, because we always want to align with the long-term strategy. Then we also the business owners and Epic owners present the new business cases or Epics that came in, so that everyone within the organization also knows about these new initiatives. As mentioned, we have a focus of 40% that we plan on new Epics, and then for 60% on new improvements or technical debt, etc. Then the teams start to break out. They're going to plan. After 2 hours, they come back. We take a look at what are the dependencies and risks and see if that will fit the planning. If not, the teams go back, have another breakout, and see if we can finalize the plan there.
And this planning, what does it contain? Does it contain like actual user stories for this quarter, or is it more like a broad idea, like a short-term roadmap?
Yeah, it is more like a short-term roadmap. And what we'll do is we'll plan the first one or two sprints, or have an idea for the second sprint. So we don't fully plan it, because we also want to incorporate, if there are changes, that we still can respond to the change. So it's more like roadmap planning that we really fully plan it ahead.
Yeah, and I can imagine that even with SAFE, that estimating work is still a hard thing to do and to get right. And there's probably some discussion in your company about that as well, whether or not you're doing it right or if you should do it at all or not. So. Okay.
We have a nice podcast about that.
Exactly.
I will listen to that one.
Also, a nice presentation, actually. So a nice sort of kind of workshop on it.
Sure, that.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's that? That's more about estimating and.
Yeah.
If you should estimate at all, if it's a waste of time, or if it's a necessary evil, and of course there are multiple views on this issue.
Yeah. What are your?
So you guys do story points or something?
Yeah, do story points. Well. On the Epic level, we do t-shirt sizing. Then we have a bit of an idea how much it will take. And in teams, we do the story point.
Arno, I've been...
So I think we should skip this discussion right now. That's more for my colleague. He likes that.
Arno, I thought you had like a pressing question that I've been dying to hear that you mentioned like a few minutes ago.
No, I've spoken to a few people about the PI planning from the guys from the trenches, let's call it like that. And I spoke to 3 people about it. Let's concrete numbers, not that much, and they're all different companies. And in the end, they all say to me that they feel a total disconnect on the whole thing. That's what they say to me anyways. That's what I get from their stories.
Well, what's the disconnection about?
Well, it feels like it's a manager objective that you have to do something in a certain amount of time, and that they just go with it because it doesn't make any sense for them at all. It doesn't benefit them at all or help them. So for them, it's like, yeah, we have to do this ritual to actually please somebody else, to make sure they meet their planning or they meet their whatever. And the whole experimentation part goes out of it, actually. Okay. It's got out of the way because you are in a planning session, which means, well, what do you mean experiment? It's set in stone.
Yeah.
At least that's the stories, right? I don't have the experience myself, so.
Well, I mean, also it depends how you're going to use it. So if you're going to use, in the end, any framework and use it to manage, but like really manage progress on projects from a traditional perspective, then yeah, it beats the whole purpose.
Yeah,
you can do that with any framework, I suppose. And I had another question, maybe not directly related to SAFe, but the different value streams that you have. And you, one thing that triggered me was that you said, oh, they function as separate entities within the organization, which can have its benefits. What are some of the negative sides of working like that? Have you experienced any?
Yeah, definitely. Well, there are interdependencies, of course, but also in setting your targets where and your goals. It might sometimes be conflicting with each other. So in our example, are we going to focus on our main channel or our own channel, or are we going to focus on our distribution platform? And that makes it sometimes hard. And there you really see that it can be conflicting. Right. And that means that we sometimes have discussions on how we, where do we focus on between the different value streams.
So does each value stream have some sort of a person that's responsible for it, for the performance of it? How is that organized? Who is responsible for the results within a value stream?
Yeah, every value stream has a business owner who is responsible. Well, the whole value stream is responsible, but this person is the person that's actually...
Yeah, the owner of it in the end.
Yeah, the owner there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So then how do you ensure that the business owners don't compete with one another for resources, attention?
Yeah. Well, every value stream has their own resources, so we make sure that they're only in one value stream. So that is also how they are set up. But still, the business owners also negotiate or discuss with each other what the focus will be altogether. But it also might be that if, like the distribution platform is a lot, that they might need to hire new people for their value stream. So in that sense, I hope that we will evolve really into mini companies where they can really have their own set of rules and resources.
And well, yeah. That on one hand, that's quite, I mean, it kind of makes sense. If you want to decentralize some of those things, I can imagine that. But on the other hand, like my first feeling is a bit counterintuitive. Because if you want to, wouldn't you be then creating more separation within your organization if you really see it as a separate, completely separate entities, which will then increase more internal competition than... actually getting the actual work done that will bring a whole revenue for the entire organization. So what is the incentive of this business owner to actually support another business owner for the overall good of the company?
Yeah, that's a good question. What we're doing, and that's also where the railway companies come in, is that we align on the targets where we want to go to, and also they are owners of the product itself. That's also the complexity in our organization. So they want to drive the distribution, but we know we also get the most revenue on our own channel. So that's also where we elaborate together with the members, but also with the business owners together, what will be the focus there.
So, but then, okay, but that comes like, it's more like top down from stakeholder driven, target or goal. That's, yep. I get that. Are the business owners incentivized based on performance of their value stream?
Not incentivized. Well, it is their target to create more revenue, for example, or to.
That's fine. That's great. But because what you see in a lot of companies is if you want to make owner somebody and let's say in a position that's comparable to the business owner that which you're describing, it's going to be like maybe head of department or something. Yeah. You know, their bonuses or their incentives might depend on the performance of that department.
Yeah. No. No, there aren't bonuses. There's also, well, as said, we are a flat organization, so there's no hierarchy to even grow. We are not allowed as a company to make profits or large profits because we are owned by the railway company. So there's incentive in that way. It's more also for the business owners, but also for the value streams, more the incentive to perform well and to create happy customers. And I think that's
the right incentive.
Yeah.
No, but that's what I mean. Because like, if you split it like this and you have the incentive, like, okay, what's my priority? Is my priority the growth of the company or is my priority the growth of my own value stream, my own department? And that's when actually priorities of people get skewed. And that's like one of the really big downsides that you see in bigger organizations. So it's like the way you describe this really makes a lot of sense. And I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah,
I think our goal, and that's with all the value streams, that our travelers have the best train travel experience through Europe.
Yeah.
And we do that on different levels. So we have some distributors that are selling our passes. We have our own channel that are selling our passes. And we create also services to have the best travel experience.
Right. So I would like to circle back a bit to the beginning. Yeah. Because, you're here as the certified safe agilist. But I looked it up, and I think I mentioned it in the introduction as well, like what a certified safe agilist like does. But I don't know. I would like maybe if you could explain like the roles and responsibilities of an agilist. Like, do you drive the value train, or do you facilitate all these alignment meetings, or what is it that you do as a safe agilist?
Yeah. Well, as a safe agilist, I'm now more guiding the transformation. So we have per team, there are scrum masters, we have release train engineers, and I'm helping to get them in the right place and know how it works. I'm providing trainings, also connecting with the leadership team on how they, give them the training, but also coach them on how they act as an agile leadership team.
Yep.
And as you might have seen also in the SAFE framework, they call it the Lean Agile Center of Excellence, which are the change agents that drive the change. I don't like the word.
I like the title. It's a mouthful. I wanted to know.
It's a mouthful and it doesn't say anything. We have this group that is leading the change there. And I'm working closely together with them to make the transformation happen. So that's my role within the organization.
All right. Yeah. And how do you become a certified safe agilist? Is it like, you do a 3-day course somewhere and you take a test and you're certified for a year or two? Or?
There's certain skills in there. You can be a safe agilist, and that's more training that you can get for a leadership team or business owners.
Okay.
Then you get certified after two days, and you have to do an assessment where you have learn all the content of the SAFe framework. That is a lot. But there are also other trainings. So you have the SAFe program consultant. Then you can really implement the SAFe in organizations. And then for every level of the framework, so for you have the SAFe product owner, you have the SAFe scrum master, you have the release train engineer. So for every role, there is a certain training available with
accompanying price tag, I would imagine.
Yeah. They capitalized on that.
So there's also a model behind that.
Yeah, we do have a training budget at Four Scouts, Arno. So I don't know, maybe this podcast makes you really...
I keep telling you guys we should be certified. You are the guys who are blocking me on this.
Hey, man, make it happen.
Also, my question to you, you heard about SAFe. You maybe have seen some organizations that were working with SAFe. How do you think about it? And I already hear some of your questions that... how you think about it, but also a bit more understanding about it.
Yeah. Well, I can maybe start a bit and then Arno can gather his thoughts maybe. I don't know. So for me, I think I had a little bit of SAFe at ING, for example, where we had some release trains as well, because like we had multiple teams working on the ING app. And I always experienced it a bit as a huge hurdle to actually release something because, you know, the train has a set cadence where it leaves the station, so to say. So and it was like I can't remember exactly, like once every 4 weeks or something. So if you shipped a bug, by example, then either you would screw up the entire train departure or you would ship it with a bug and, you'll get to fix it in 4 weeks from now. And to me, that is totally not agile. So that kind of threw me off the whole thing. The Scrum of Scrums, I've had quite a bit, and I do see the value in that for sure, where you align with other teams and know what they're doing and what's up and what's their, other dependencies or problems that they're facing that you might be able to help solve. So, yeah, I do see that as a nice thing. But other than that, I don't really have, apart from the release train thing, I don't really have any super negative stories to tell about SAFe. So, I don't know, maybe Arno or Panche have some other experiences to share.
Well, I've said before, right, I never experienced it myself, but I do get triggered on a lot of the stuff, actually, if I read it.
Yeah.
Like the whole PI planning part. For me, that's so confusing in itself, like the iterations on it and the release train, as you said. It all seems to me like nothing much changed compared to Waterfall, but we do it in smaller iterations, let's say. Yeah. That's how I experienced so far. Plus, one of my personal heroes said it's kind of shitty, so that's also a thing. Right?
Who is that?
Martin Fowler.
Ah.
So that's... if he says so, then I'm pretty sure I agree, because he's my personal hero. Either he's correct or not, it doesn't matter.
You sound like all the agilists and all the scrum masters and all the SAFe practitioners. I know it's like if it's in the book, then it has to be true.
Yeah, but he's the hero, right? If you sign the whole Agile manifesto, then you're probably right, my mind.
Now, my personal experience, I also haven't had a lot of it, and it's been mostly hearing it, and mostly bad experiences. So this was quite a nice and refreshing discussion. Yes, I'm really glad that you were here and that exactly explained us how you guys implement it. And it feels like if you're going to use this quarterly planning just to really set out really goals and targets and high expectations against your team, then I have to agree with Arno. It's like nothing really changes. And then the team is left with nothing, no other option but to try to play the system. And that like beats the whole purpose of any organization instead of trying to deliver value.
Or Agile itself.
But of any organization who wants to deliver value, you start, if your performance is measured against what you're going to deliver at the end of the quarter, so how has that changed than like Waterfall maybe? It's like, this is okay. Now, what are we going to do? We're going to inflate our estimations so we can create some room in between that, like, if something goes south, that, you know, we're not punished for it.
Yeah, stakeholders are happy, because that's usually the case, right?
Yeah, so it depends, like, really how you use it. And one thing that we went through the discussion here is, yes, I think you mentioned it kind of, look at the organization, what it needs to use, I think, which framework. And what that made me think more, well, probably because no organization is the same in different periods of time, because organizations change and develop and evolve. So each organization goes through different phases, and then, like, probably they can, I don't know, all use all of the frameworks and tools, but there are certain periods in times when, okay, Scrum is interesting, Kanban is interesting, Lean, XP, I would say probably always, then becomes a point when Safe becomes interesting. So what is it? So my question would be then to attach to this train of thought is, when would you think that our organization is ready to implement Safe
is it like a team size or like amount of people, or is it
what is it that triggered you to try it out at URL?
What triggered it for me is that I wouldn't apply Safe for most small businesses, because therefore it is really a too large and too complex framework. I think it can help if you're working in an enterprise where you have these large strategies that you want to roll out, and I think there a large enterprise really can benefit from it. But if we're looking at our organization, where we are still working with traditional real companies, where they're still looking at sometimes an outlook for a longer term, then it can really help, especially working with the lean portfolio management. And that was one of the things that triggered us to use Safe. We were already working with portfolio management with our members, and we thought that would be nice to also continue there, and still applying Agile within the organization. And there, Safe came up as one of the best solutions for our organization. And I definitely wouldn't say that Safe fits everywhere.
No.
Okay. It's also quite interesting, because URL is not really a big enterprise organization. It's still quite a small company.
Yeah.
How many teams do you guys have then, spread across the three value streams?
Well, if we're looking at development teams, we now have about six. But if you're looking in the value streams spread out over the three, I think we have about 15.
Yeah, there's business teams like every kind. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that doesn't sound, I mean, it's probably, it is a lot, right? But that doesn't sound like a huge multinational organization with hundreds of teams,
no,
right?
No, definitely not. And that's also why we don't use everything out of the Safe framework, but only use the parts that are working for us.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I think we are... Yeah, quite nice on time here. I don't know if you guys have any more questions for one another. Otherwise, it might be a good time to wrap it up, maybe.
Maybe it's for the best. I think I still have a lot of them. Yeah, but we need a new podcast for another one.
But did your stance for Safe kind of like, is it still the same, or did you kind of loosen up on it?
Nah, in the end, I'm not sold on the concept, right? And if you say to me, we're going to use the part that are needed for you, then it's not about Safe, then it's just implementing some things.
Yeah, but that's like with a lot of things, right? I mean, people use Scrum, and then they also take like only a few things for like, yeah, I mean, I think that's quite common practice to just take the things that work for you.
So, well, yes and no. Because in the end, you want to transform a company, and then it's easier to sell the whole concept, because that makes people feel safe and secure. And if you're going to say, yeah, we're going to just do small parts out of it, then it's, well. gets harder. So you see the same with Scrum as well. Like people do it according to the book, but miss the complete values of it. Like, why would you even do it? And then they just hard do it like according to the book, and then they fail on it, and then they say Agile fails. And that's not the case.
Right.
And I think actually selling those frameworks and having the whole certified mess around it just does the same thing as Scrum by the book, but just on the C-level, which makes the impact way worse. So, yeah. At least that's my opinion on it.
Not sold yet.
I'm definitely not sold yet, but...
Maybe
this is my hero. My hero chat is not good. So,
Man, you're religious like now, really on it.
Maybe we can get you a spot at Eurail and see if you
like an internship. There's some parts of it which I don't get. You know, for example, we're going to get in deep. But if you have a planning and just map out the dependencies, to me that's ridiculous. You know, fix the dependency so it never hurts you again. I just don't get that. You map it out and look at it and talk about it. No, just if I'm actually fixing an issue, I'm going to swap around 12 teams to fix my issue. I'm not going to wait for planning to let's look at it. I'm there to solve an issue, solve a problem.
No, but I think that's also not the case. We're not waiting to the dependencies to arrive there.
Well, it depends who you ask, right?
What do you say?
Well, it depends who you ask. It's not maybe not meant for it, but then you go back to according to the book. People wait for it. People need to speak up and they don't. So yeah.
That's true.
Okay. All right.
But then we go back to organization, right? Because they need to feel the trust of the guys on the C-level, and they came from a waterfall mindset, a project mindset. And well, they have to change. You help them change, but in the end they slip. They slip back to their original behavior and you kill the trust with the teams and then they go silent again.
But that's
what I said, right? We need a new podcast on this, I guess.
Yeah, exactly, because that's not really a safe fault, right? Exactly. I mean, you could have the same discussion when you implement Agile or any other.
Of course, and that's why safe doesn't really help.
Right.
Unless maybe neither, and the other ones also don't.
Well, I mean,
so and Scrum neither. So
okay. Yeah, so let's schedule another podcast if Jesse wants to return at least.
I definitely want to return to this discuss.
All right. So I hope we haven't been too hard on you. At least I enjoyed you having here on the show. I think I learned a thing or two.
Yeah, me too. Definitely.
So I hope. I hope the listener as well. And So Jesse, thank you very much for being here.
Yeah. Thanks for having.
I hope you can put up with me. Sorry for me,
Arno.
Okay, that's good.
And I want to thank the listener as well for joining in. So if you guys on the other end of this channel here have used Safe, just let us know what you think about it. Did it help you, or was it just a big waste of your time, you feel? I don't know. Please let us know. I would love to hear from you. If you have any comments or questions, please send them to podcast@4scouts.nl or on Twitter @4scouts. And thanks again, and see you guys on the next one. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Scoutcast, Roasting Marshmallows, with your host, Rolf Serg. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit 4scouts.nl and on Twitter @4scouts. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time on Scoutcast, Roasting Marshmallows.